This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Sometimes summer reading captures the season itself. Here's the opening of Ray Bradbury's book, Dandelion Wine. It was a quiet morning, the town covered over with darkness and at ease in bed. Summer gathered in the weather. The wind had the proper touch. The breathing of the world was long and warm and slow. You only had to rise, lean from your window, and know that this indeed was the first real time of freedom and living. This was the first morning of summer. Douglas Spaulding, 12, freshly wakened, let summer idle him on its early morning stream, a whole summer ahead to cross off the calendar day by day. Well, most of us only get a couple of weeks of that kind of freedom, and it's important not to waste our summer idles on less than terrific books. If you know of a great book that'll take us to far-flung locations or distant galaxies, or if your taste runs more towards mysteries or politics, modern fiction, or history, call and help us assemble Talk of the Nation's summer reading list. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're going to concentrate on books that are available largely in print at bookstores. We know of the great ones in the used bookstores, too, but let's focus on what people can get at their bookstores on their way to the beach. Later in the program, Minor League Baseball Promotions. It's Richard Nixon Bobblehead Day in Nashua, New Hampshire tonight. But first, for our annual summer reading list, we've invited back annual guest Laura Miller. She's a book critic for Salon and joins us from our bureau in New York. And happy summer, Laura.
Thank you.
What books top your list this year?
Well, this year I was determined to find at least a handful of books that were page-turners, that had really great stories that you really just had to finish, even if you had to stay up all night, but that weren't either really stupid or really horribly written. And that turned out to be a lot harder than it sounds.
We haven't even gotten Bill Clinton's book yet.
Well, I'll reserve judgment on that one until it comes out. But yeah, it seems like too much of the time you have to choose between a good story and then writing that doesn't make you wince and characters that don't seem like they're made out of tissue paper. Mm-hmm. But I did manage to find four that I was really thrilled by. And the first one is called The Shadow of the Wind. It's by a Spaniard. It's his first book to be published in the U.S. And his name is Carlos Ruiz Zafón. And that is Z-A-F-O-N. And it is a kind of romantic, sweeping, sort of Victor Hugo type story about a young boy who finds a book in a sort of secret place called the Library of Forgotten Books. Mm-hmm. And he falls in love with a book. And then he discovers that some mysterious person is going around burning all the remaining copies of this author's books. And it is set in Barcelona, not too long after the end of the Second World War. So it's got a beautiful romantic setting and mood, but it's also kind of haunted by the war, both World War II and the Spanish Civil War.
And your other three?
The Ghostwriter by John Harwood. Do you want me to describe the whole thing?
Well, just give us a caption.
Okay. That is a fabulous, very spooky ghost story in the classic mode that will remind some people of A.S. Byatt's Possession. It's about a young Australian man trying to figure out what it was that happened to his mother back in England that caused her to be afraid all of her life, and who is reading wonderful old ghost stories written by his grandmother. There's Kings of Infinite Space by James Hines, which is kind of like a cross between Dilbert and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's another ghost story, but it's set in a nondescript Texas government agency, just one of those big fluorescent lit acres of cubicles, only it turns out to be haunted. And it's a temp who's the hero, so he's kind of a down-and-out guy. Mm-hmm. And the last one is...
He'll solve the mystery as soon as he gets health care. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, which could take a while. And the last one is The Queen of the South by another Spaniard, Arturo Perez Reverte, which many of your listeners might know from his book The Club Dumas and several other books. And that is a terrific crime story. It's about a poor Mexican woman who goes on the lam when her drug runner boyfriend is killed and flees to Spain and eventually becomes the the biggest drug trafficker in the south of Spain. So it's kind of a literary narco-corrido, if you know that genre of Mexican folk ballad that celebrates the exploits of drug lords. But she is the heroine of this one, and she has to make her way in a very macho world.
All different kinds of books that take us away to different places and times. Do you have any criterion that's for summer reading that sets it apart from the rest of the year?
I just always want to feel when I put the book down that I can't wait to pick it back up again. Because when you're lying on the beach or when you're on an airplane, you don't really have the extra energy or attention to sort of read that history of the Soviet gulags or whatever else some publication has put on the summer reading list with total disregard for what people actually want to read when they're on vacation.
Let's get some listeners involved. We need your help to assemble our summer reading list, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email us totn@npr.org. Let's talk with Liz, who's with us from Stinson Beach, California.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm not well read, but I'm amazed. I'm reading this book that it's a paperback, Middlesex. It won a Pulitzer Prize. Author Jeffrey Eugenides, maybe, he wrote The Virgin Suicides. And it is fascinating, and I can't wait to go get back to it whenever I put it down. But should I read just a little bit about what it is?
Okay, just give us a hint.
Now, Middlesex tells the breathtaking story of Calliope Stephanides and three generations of Greek-American Stephanides family. They travel from a tiny village overlooking Mount Olympus in Asia Minor to Prohibition-era Detroit, witnessing its glory days as the Motor City and the race riots of 67 before they move out to the tree-lined streets of suburban Grosse Pointe, Michigan.
I think you did fine in Stephanides, but it's Calliope, I think.
Thank you. Thank you, Calliope. To understand why Calliope is not like other girls, she has to undercover a guilty family secret and the astonishing genetic history that turns Cali into Cal, one of the most audacious and wondrous narrators in contemporary fiction. It's a fantastic book, and I'm just amazed at the well-read people who haven't read it.
Laura Miller?
I have read that book, and I have reviewed that book, and it is terrific. I agree.
Good summer reading, do you think?
Yes, actually, because it's really fun, but it also just completely fascinating. What I really remember are the race riot scenes, which sound kind of grim, but it's like this incredible, surreal adventure that the main character Calliope has walking through the streets of Detroit while the whole city is sort of falling apart. It's a kind of a gripping passage.
Yeah, and I haven't read it all, so...
Don't tell her how it comes out.
Thank you.
Liz, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Here's an email we got from Rachel in San Francisco. One of the best books I've read in years is Seriously Funny, The Rebel Comedians of the 1950s and 60s. She says it's perfect for light summer reading. It chronicles the rises and, in some cases, falls of such revolutionary comedians as Mort Saul, Shelley Berman, Nichols and May, Woody Allen, Phyllis Diller, Tom Lehrer, Bill Cosby, and others, full of great anecdotes and captures a unique era in America. So if that's your taste, there's a recommendation. And by the way, the suggestions from our reviewers and from all the listeners are going to be compiled on our website, so you can go there after the program and catch up if you didn't scribble down a title or an author. Let's get another caller on the line. Joe is with us from Baldwin, Kansas.
Yes, good morning. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Okay, well, I'm calling because I'm wondering if your guest has read or has reviewed the book from Ben Stein, his little book on what not to do as far as finances are concerned. I'd like to change the tone of the topic just a bit.
I probably should read that book, but I have to confess that I have not.
And I just bought it. I'm sorry.
Is it entertaining?
I just bought it. I haven't had a chance to open it yet.
Okay. Because that's the sort of book that we all kind of put off to read when the fall comes along, and yet somehow summer comes around again and we still haven't read it. It's like eating your spinach.
But are you going to take that away on summer vacation, Joe?
Oh, yes, sir.
And where are you headed this year?
Well, I'm going to pick up the family and we're going to move back to San Diego.
Well, have a great trip.
Well, thank you, sir, and I thank you, and I love your show.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And here's another email. This Byrne. Of course, the big Bill Clinton book, but also Rural Renaissance, the story of a couple of ad execs who have moved to southern Wisconsin to open a bed and breakfast and get closer to the earth. Very real and very good. I'm not familiar with that one.
I don't know that one either.
Okay. Any ideas for nonfiction books? Maybe not Ben Stein's Guide to What to Do with your Personal Finances, but any suggestions that you have, Laura?
Well, I have to say, my stack is pretty full of stuff like Ghost Wars and the new James Bamford book. That my taste in nonfiction runs towards, in terrorism and intelligence and intrigue. But I have to say, I don't really like to be carrying those on an airplane. So I think it scares the rest of the passengers. So I usually stick to the fiction for that. But at home at night, I'll probably be checking out Ghost Wars, and I'll definitely be reading that Bill Clinton biography as soon as I open the envelope when they send it to me.
Okay. Let's talk now with Fabian, who's with us from Norman, Oklahoma.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to suggest a novel that I finished up a couple of months ago. It's nonfiction, but it reads like a fiction novel. It's really great. It's called The Devil in the White City by Eric Larson. And it's really fascinating. It's about the creation of the Chicago World's Fair toward the end of the 19th century. And it's really, really gripping. I mean, not only does it talk about the creation of the World's Fair and everything that went on in terms of building and other kinds of social aspects surrounding the fair, but it also describes this murderer who is stalking the women in and around Chicago during the World's Fair. Like, he uses the World's Fair as a vehicle to lure them and basically kill them.
I have to say, Fabian, I'm a big fan. I've not read this book. I'm not familiar with it, but I love Dan Okrent's book on the construction of Rockefeller Center and all the deals that were involved in assembling the land and the fabulous wealth of the Rockefeller family and how all of that happened. I love these kinds of stories. Laura Miller, do they appeal to you?
Yes. Well, I mean, the Devil in the White City is a really remarkable book because it like your caller says, it has this thriller-like story, but it's true. And this book was, I think, the number one nonfiction pick for the independent booksellers last year. It was very popular. A lot of people really loved it. I have not read it, though, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, you should.
I know I should. I really wanted to, but with one thing and another,
yeah.
I just didn't get to it. So,
well, thanks for the suggestion, Fabian.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
We just have a little time left with you, Laura. Again, these days when we take this book in our bag to the beach, our precious, anything we should actively avoid?
Well, I hate to be the person who says this, but I do not see what all the fuss is about The Rule of Four. It is a book that is being sold as the new Da Vinci Code, and while The Da Vinci Code is not a very well-written book, it's a really fast page-turner with a kind of fascinating nonfiction aspect. And I just thought The Rule of Four was a mess and kind of pretentious and not very exciting. So, but I may be the only person in America right now who thinks that.
Well, thank you very much for both your recommendations and for your advice on what one book we might want to skip over. Laura Miller, appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Laura Miller is a book critic for Salon. She joined us from our bureau in New York. We're talking about the books, well, we really should be reading this summer. Let's talk about the books we really want to read this summer. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or email us, TOTN@npr.org. To see a complete list of books for our list, you can go to our website, npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're building this year's Talk of the Nation summer reading list. Joanne Castagna, emailed us to say, "Hi, I'm reading The Birth of the Chess Queen by Marilyn Yalom, Y-A-L-O-M. It's a history of the queen piece in chess. It has history," she says, "illustrations, and is actually easier than playing the game." You're invited to join us with your questions or suggestions for best new books to be reading this summer or books out in paperback. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or like Joanne, you can send us email, TOTN at NPR.org. Many of us spend hours and hours in the car getting to and from our summer destinations. That might be an ideal time to listen to some new books released on audio. Joining us now with some recommendations is Don Katz. He's the founder of Audible Incorporated, a website that lets you download books right onto your MP3 player. He's at his office in Wayne, New Jersey. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Neil.
So what new books are you looking forward to listening to this summer?
Well, you know, it's a lot of our customers, one of two of these hundreds of thousands of people that come to Audible.com and never tried an audiobook before. So one of the great summer experiences for your listeners ought to be just to try one if you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a singularly compelling, theatrical, and just generally pleasurable experience. I think harking back to the pleasures of being read to as a child on one hand, and also it's a great way to have literate listening when you can't use your eyes to read. And in our world, therefore, I would recommend Authors in Performance. We're going to do a tremendous amount of business with David Sedaris's Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, NPR's own, and it is just a stunning performance, and arguably, because that's what he does so well, better than the book. In that sense, I would say that's true of Al Franken's amazing rendition of his Lies and the Lying Liars That Tell Them, that, and also, frankly, Stephen King reading Bag of Bones and E.B. White reading Charlotte's Web, for that matter, and that leads us to one of the blockbusters for the audio community is going to be the fact that President Clinton is reading his own autobiography when that comes out shortly.
Have you had the chance to listen to any of this?
No, we have not, but we're hearing good things from the studio, and we hear that he and his publishers are very pleased. It's a 9-hour rendition, interestingly enough, as opposed to what will eventually be a 55-hour rendition in Unabridged, which we will also offer for download at audible.com. But we're hearing it's quite compelling, and it just is compelling to have the refracted experience of the author's interpretation of his or her own work.
What about keeping the kids happy in the car?
All kinds of things on the kids' side. You know, we have the Listening Library collection of kids' classics, and it's just about everything you could think of that a kid would want to listen to. We're consistently seeing that people in audio do go back to the classics, which is quite interesting. I mean, the Anna Karenina is tremendously popular, the Oprah pick this month, and I get the sense that once people have an iPod and they're able to load it up with 80 to 800 audiobooks in a couple of ounces, which obviously reflects on the utility in the airplane that you were talking about before, I think that what happens is people are willing to challenge themselves with things they feel like they meant to have read. And at Audible.com, people are talking about knocking off 3 and 4 books in a month in a world where they previously were able to read 3 and 4 in a year.
Well, Don Katz, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Don Katz, founder of Audible Incorporated. It provides audiobooks for downloading on its website, which is audible.com. And he joined us from his office in Wayne, New Jersey. Here's an email we got from Sarah Remy in Portland, Oregon. "The pleasure of my company, Steve Martin, was a great, great read. One of my recent favorites. It makes great summer reading because it's only 150 pages and absolutely hilarious. I found myself laughing out loud, something I never do while reading." And let's get another caller on the line. This is Paige in Murray City, Tennessee.
Hi.
Hi, Paige.
I have a really good book to recommend for the summer.
Sure, what is it?
Aragon by Christopher Polony. It's about this boy, Aragon.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds a polished blue stone while he's hunting in the spine or whatever, which is like a mountain range.
Uh-huh.
And so he brings this stone home, and he is going to the trade the next day or whatever.
The fair, yeah.
Uh-huh. And he asks this guy about it, and...
Well, don't tell me how it comes out, Paige, but Aragon is one of the names of the characters in The Lord of the Rings. This is the same guy?
No, it's spelt different, actually.
Ah, okay.
It's spelled E-R-A-G-O-N.
Aha, without the Gorn, the extra R in there for the character in Lord of the Rings. Well, Paige, have you finished reading the book?
Huh? Huh?
Have you finished it yet?
Yeah, actually, I have. It's really, really good.
Okay. We'll recommend it for other kids then.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Joining us now for our conversation on best new books to read this summer is David Kippen. He, too, is part of our regular team that helps us gather the annual summer reading list here at Talk of the Nation, a book critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's with us from the studios of radio station KGO in San Francisco. Good to talk to you again, David.
Oh, hi, Neil.
Any new works of nonfiction since we dealt mostly with fiction with Laura?
Yeah, actually. The first one that comes to mind is called Sontag and Kale, Opposites Attract Me, by a guy named Craig Seligman. This is the perfect book for everybody like me who grew up as a way too little kid with copies of The New Yorker on the coffee table, not knowing what the hell to make of them. This is
cartoons were always good.
The cartoons were great entry-level reading, and then I found myself graduating to Pauline Kael's movie reviews, which probably had a totally warping effect on my mental development. This book sort of sets up Pauline Kael and Susan Sontag as these two archetypes of critical writing, and Kael, of course, being the more exuberant, the more lively, the funnier, God knows, and more free-ranging, whereas Susan Sontag is more modernist, more... a little more abstruse, a little cooler to the touch. Seligman basically traces both their careers and plays them off one another in a way that's really funny and I think illuminates some of his own critical taste. It's just a very engaging book. I think the world of it.
Any ideas about a fiction offering?
Oh, yeah, you bet. The one I can't get out of my head is the guy I'm interviewing tonight. And if you've got any pointers, my hat will be off to you. This fellow, David Foster Wallace, whom some of your listeners may know from his incredibly brilliant book, Infinite Jest, several years back. He has a new short story collection called Oblivion, which is the name of one of the stories. There's another story in it called Good Old Neon that I just finished last night. And you get to the end of this story, and it's all you can do not to suffer a bout of vertigo. That's how he yanks the rug out from under you. It's an incredibly challenging and thoughtful, and something he doesn't get credit often enough for, a really heartfelt story.
The only advice I can offer is if you find yourself at sixes and sevens and don't have any idea of what to ask him next, just look at him thoughtfully and say, "That's fascinating. Tell me more."
I'm writing that down right now. Fascinating. Tell me more. Got it.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Byron, who's with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hi. I have a suggestion that's going to strike a lot of people probably off the beaten path. This is not a novel so much as a graphic novel. It is a collection called Palomar, which collects into one volume a series of stories from a comic book called Love and Rockets.
I know it well, yes.
Yeah, Gilbert Hernandez. And this is the entire body of work to date of his stories from the fictional Central American town of Palomar. And it just has everything. It is one of the most amazing works of fiction that I've ever read. I mean, it is every bit as deep, in my opinion, as James Joyce. Hmm. And it's all collected into one volume, and it's a graphic novel. It came from a comic book. I think that most people would probably tend to dismiss it out of hand for that reason, and I think it's a shame because it deserves to be much more widely read.
There's another graphic novel that's just out, and I'm appalled that I'm blanking on the name of the author, but it's called It's a Plane, and it's about a guy who gets assigned to write Superman and his writer's block and dealing with this and a lot of other adventures. Wonderful, wonderful book.
About that. Haven't read it, but I've heard about it.
David Kippen, do you dip into graphic novels at all?
It's still only dipping. I mean, I'm a big admirer of Chris Ware's work. He wrote Jimmy Corrigan, The Smartest Kid in the World, and maybe your listener earlier who was talking about The Devil in the White City would like that because a lot of it flashes back to the World's Fair in Chicago in, I think, 1893. But I should probably put in a word for Dante's Inferno by Sandow Burke, which isn't a graphic novel exactly. It's a retranslation of Dante's Inferno set in Skid Row, Los Angeles. It's this really imaginative and incredibly daring artist in California who's done a lot of stuff like that, and basically he makes you think about Dante's Inferno in a way that you were never going to in a billion years. I really think a lot of it. Sandow Burke, and it's B-I-R-K.
Byron, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Here's another email from this one from Karen Belovich. I'd like to recommend Zoo Gang Girls by Joan Arndt, A-R-N-D-T, very funny post-apocalyptic lesbian satire cloning bioterrorism and gender wars covered from a very skewed retro-futuristic perspective. I'll work it out. Anyway, a darn good read available from Artemis Presser from Amazon.com. Obviously, a lot of these books are available at your local bookstore as well. I'm not familiar with that one. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Walter, who's also in San Francisco.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi. The book that I read, it's called The Damp Chamber and Other Bad Places by Frank Chigas. And it's a collection of horror stories, supernatural, more than anything else. But the interesting thing about the stories is a lot of the settings are in, like, far-flung places like Japan and Prague. And so it's kind of interesting. It's almost like a travelogue at times.
Is this a new book?
Where the stories are set. And it's a very creepy read. And if people like M.R. James type of writing or H.P. Lovecraft type of stuff, this is it's a great book.
Is this a new one?
I think it came maybe 3 months ago, something like that, about 3 months possibly.
David Kippen, I'm unfamiliar with it.
I don't know that one either, though your caller did mention
just
travel.
Yeah, a great review on sfreader.com.
Well, no, clearly not David Kippen's review.
But I'll look it up. I certainly will.
Thanks for the recommendation, Walter.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can get another one. And this is Charlie, and Charlie's also with us in San Francisco.
Hi, I'm calling to recommend two books that I read, one fiction, one nonfiction. Michael Chabon's The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
Out in paperback now. Oh, great book.
Out in paperback and on audio cassette, I believe.
And the other?
The other is Bill Bryson's A Brief History of Nearly Everything. Mm. It's an amazing nonfiction about basically everything. It's about the world, the universe, geology, everything from plate tectonics to quasars and black holes.
Bill Bryson was kind enough to join us on this program to discuss that book when it came out, and it's a great read.
It is an amazing read, and so is Cavalier and Clay. Cavalier and Clay is just epic in proportion, but easy to read as well. It's a great book for the summer. Both of them are, because they're accessible in a really incredible way.
Well, thanks very much for the recommendations, Charlie.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Go ahead.
If I might, Michael Chabon has a terrific essay about Berkeley, where he lives now, in a new anthology that I'm just over the moon about. It's called My California, Journeys by Great Writers. It's travel essays throughout California, not just the big cities, but the out-of-the-way corners. And it's got not just Chabon, but Dana Gioia, who is a Californian and now the chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts. Pico Ayer's written in the introduction, and it's all a benefit for the California Arts Council. All the proceeds from My California go to raise money for arts education in schools, and other states are even making inquiries to follow their lead, because God knows there's not a flush arts council in the country at the moment.
I should mention also that Cavalier and Clay, the characters in that wonderful book, develop a character, a comic book character called The Escapist, and Michael Chabon and others are now chronicling The Escapist's adventures in real comic books. I think this is the first.
That.
So they're available at your local comic bookstore as well. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's another email, this one from Pamela Saunders in Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm devouring Alexander McCall Smith's number one ladies detective agency series, Travel to Botswana and Meet Mademoiselle Romotswe and Discover the Delights of Africa and Her People. Light, funny, and thought-provoking reading. Well, booksellers are part psychiatrist and part book critic, helping to match readers to the perfect printed companion. To help us add some paperback choices to the 2004 summer reading list, joining us now is Steve Brumfield. He's co-owner of Manio Booksellers in Manio, North Carolina, on the Outer Banks. Today he joins us by phone from Charlottesville, Virginia. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation, Steve.
Thanks,
Brumfield.
Neil.
A lot of summer reading, last year's blockbusters are now also out in paperback. Any suggestions for what's selling and what you would recommend?
Well, we get a lot of people that are ready to go to the beach and read, and they don't want to take the big hardbacks. You're right. So some of the lighter things that we like to suggest, mysteries, of course, and I love some of the suggestions the callers have already given.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Latitudes by Tony Horowitz is a nice travel book. He's done Confederates in the Attic and One for the Road and Baghdad Without a Map. And Blue Latitudes is a nonfiction book where he goes out gets on one of these big sailing vessels and learns how to put the sails up and follows the sailing exploits of Captain Cook around the South Pacific. So you learn some history, but you also do it. He's got a dry wit. If people enjoy Bill Bryson, they might enjoy Tony Horwitz.
Mm-hmm. You're down there on the Outer Banks in North Carolina. Any regional books that people around the country might want to pay attention to?
Well, there's a brand new one out called How to Read a North Carolina Beach. Now, even if there are a lot of people from all over the country come to the Outer Banks, this is by Orrin Pilkey, and it's put out by UNC Press, and it's a little paperback. But it's really good for anybody who goes along the beach, and they want to know why, when you're walking along the sand, all of a sudden do you sink down to your knees?
Hmm.
You know, or what are those little holes along the beach, and people say, oh, that's a crab in there or something. But Orrin Pilkey and his crew of people who have put together How to Read a North Carolina Beach tell you exactly what those things you're going to find along the beach are. It's a book about waves. It's a book about the sand. It's a book about what you'll find geologically along the beach. So that's a great one.
And anything for the kids?
Oh, well, we've got a local author who's got books all over the country. She's sold over 2 million. It's the Suzanne Tate Nature Series. And Billy Bluefish, Crabby and Nabby, these are books that are in national aquariums and in school systems. She's got 26 books in a nature series. They're only $4.95, but they're great little books. Colorful, they're done by a local illustrator named James Melvin. Beautiful books that give kids information about the nature, whether it's a bluefish or a seagull. They learn something, but it's also told in a entertaining little story.
Well, Steve Brumfield, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Steve Brumfield is co-owner of Mateo Booksellers in Mateo, North Carolina, and joined us by phone from Charlottesville, Virginia. By the way, our staff has managed to track down the name of the author of the graphic novel I mentioned earlier. It's a bird. The author's name is Stephen Siegel, S-E-A-G-L-E. And here's another email we got from Jeff Hellman. I just finished reading Alice Munro's trilogy of short stories published in the June 14th, June 21st edition of The New Yorker magazine. They're phenomenal. I think short stories make perfect summer reading, not too long to take you away from other summer fun, and perfect for a quick afternoon break in the sun. Jeff, thanks for that. And we'll be back with more recommendations from David Kippen, more of your calls and more of your emails. TOTN@npr.org is the email address. And the telephone number, if you'd like to join us, is TOTN@npr.org. And we'll also find out why Richard Nixon will be getting the nod tonight in Nashua, New Hampshire. We're going to be talking about minor league baseball promotions, inspired and demented. Give us a call if you have experience with those too. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, Ira Flatow will be in Seattle broadcasting from the new Science Fiction Museum there. He'll be talking in this hour about Mars science and Mars science fiction. So join us tomorrow for Talk of the Nation Science Friday. Today we're discussing the best books to read this summer. In a minute, we'll be talking about the best gimmicks minor league ballparks employ to increase attendance and joy. Join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN@npr.org. Here's an email we got from Melissa Rempe in Carson City, Nevada. I recently read Cork Boat by John Pollock. It's the true story of a man, his relationships with his family and friends, and how he decided as a child to build a boat of corks. It's full of factoids about corks, stories of Pollock's life and career, and the discoveries he made about corks, families, friends, career, while building and piloting his cork boat. Well, David Kippen, the book critic for the San Francisco Chronicle, is with us. And I guess the event of the summer is going to be the publication of the new Bill Clinton book next week. Have you had a glimpse of it?
Not. And if anybody within the sound of my voice has and can get one to me, I would be forever in his or her debt, because somehow I'm going to have to write about it next week, and I'd much prefer not to have to read 900 pages in 20 minutes.
How big a deal is this book going to be?
Well, I was just talking to a bookseller who says it's going to be her biggest book in 28 years in the business, which sounds like hyperbole to me, considering, you know, there have been Harry Potter books in that time span. But it's going to be huge. And I gather there's some rivalry between Mr. Clinton and his wife as to which of them will rack up ultimately the bigger sales figures.
Well, they might as well fight about that, too.
Yes.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Jennifer in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hey, good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
I have a great book, My Sister's Keeper by Jodi Picoult. It is a book about a family, and their second child is diagnosed with leukemia, and they have a third child that's genetically predetermined to be a fit for their second child, and this third child continues to give marrow and things like that, and eventually gets sick of it and sues for the rights for her body back.
Hmm.
It's a great book. Good page turner, well written, interesting characters. Overall, just a great book for the summer.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks.
Here's another email from Rick Jones in Pleasant Hill, California. Please mention Neal Stephenson's Baroque Cycle. I've just finished his first book, Quicksilver, which runs over 900 pages. It reads like a much shorter book, so riveting you're compelled to pick it up at all hours of the day. Stevenson's story is a sprawling, bawdy story of intrigue and politics in 16th century England and Europe. Throughout, he brings to life his characters making their way through the violence, chaos, and filth of Europe while making convenient use of real people who inhabited the narrow space between royalty and peasants. Pirates, harems, Cossacks, excellent strong male and female characters. Wow. The second book, Confusion, has just been released, and I can't wait to dive into the next 1,000 pages. And David, I have to admit, I love Neal Stephenson, but this first book of the Quicksilver of the Baroque Cycle, I have yet to open it. I may read it this summer.
I haven't cracked it myself either, though. I've been meaning to get around to Neal Stephenson ever since Laura Miller put in a good word a couple of years ago for Cryptonomicon. I did just return from the annual book convention in Chicago, and would you believe that this guy who's come out with, Stephenson I mean, who's come out with two doorstops in the last, what, year and a half?
Yeah.
Has a new one coming for fall, presumably the third installment in that cycle.
I hope he wrote them all at once and is just releasing them this quickly rather than writing that quickly in between them. Let's get one more caller in. Mike is with us from Camp Verde, Arizona.
Hi, Neil. Love your program.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm going to suggest an author who kept me turning pages for about a couple of weeks while I read three of his books. I'm not talking about The Da Vinci Code. I'm talking about Angels and Demons, Terminal Point, and Digital Fortress, all by Dan Brown. One of those was exciting, and each one very, very different.
Those were the non-Da Vinci Code Dan Browns.
That's correct, and I'd strongly suggest any one of those. I, in fact, enjoyed them more than Da Vinci Code.
David, are you a Dan Brown devotee?
I have yet to make Dan Brown's acquaintance in print. I'm humbled to have to admit.
And the other thing, these three are in paperback.
Another argument in their favor, Mike.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Okay.
And a final email as well. A Scout's Honor, writes John Elliott, is a must-read for a dad and his son. That's A Scout's Honor. David Kippen, one more recommendation before you go.
Oh, gosh. There is a book called Murdered by Capitalism, a memoir of 150 years of life and death on the American left by a guy named John Ross. He's a longtime alternative journalist. This is his memoir of just about 75 years in and out of the left-hand side of American politics. And then the 75 years before that, as narrated by a guy named Edward Schnaubelt, who was one of the original Haymarket bombers. It's a strange sort of deathbed conversation that takes place in a cemetery, and he's a really lively, funny, exuberant, kind of sloppy writer who ends the book with like this 8-page poem that's like one of those old New Yorker poems at New Year's when Roger Angel would wish Happy New Year to everybody on earth that he liked. It's a book that's unlike anything I've ever encountered before, and it's just, you know, not uncritical in its approach to radical American history, but so salty and high-spirited.
The books our guests have recommended can be found on our website, which is at npr.org. And David Kippen, thanks very much, as always, for your time.
Oh, I look forward to it every year, Neil.
David Kippen, a book critic for the San Francisco Chronicle, and he joined us from KGO in San Francisco.